Trump making good on some campaign promises, signing more than 200 executive actions, unraveling the work of his predecessor. He also withdrew the U.S. from the Paris Climate Accord and the World Health Organization, rescinded diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, and ended federal recognition of transgender identity. On immigration, Trump declared an end to birthright citizenship, which is already facing challenges in court as it is protected by the 14th Amendment.
We think we have good grounds, but you could be right. I mean, you'll find out. It's ridiculous. We're the only country in the world that does this with birthright, as you know.
All right, Sandy Rios with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, that was WHAS 11 reporting, at least on some of the executive orders President Trump just signed. And I don't think any two are more controversial. Well, it's kind of a toss-up, but January 6th pardons. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. We're going to talk about that today. And also, birthright citizenship and a number of executive orders making the border shut down, closed forever for illegal immigrants, and a bunch of other things in between. But today we're going to talk to someone who really has been at the center of this drama, both of those dramas. Not only was he tremendously personally affected by the events of January the 6th, he also is probably the nation's leading expert on birthright citizenship. And so it's a twofer today with one of my favorite people in all of public office who I admire tremendously. His name is John Eastman, and he'll join us in a minute. But first, this is Sanctity of Life Month, and we are honoring the death of 66 million babies who were, their lives were taken in abortion. And that's happened since 1973 when Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton were passed. In fact, babies' lives are even at a greater risk now because of the abortion pill, which accounts for 60% of all abortions. It's a tragedy 24/7. It's a continuing tragedy for girls who think that they're lucky because they can abort their babies so easily with a couple of pills. And they just don't understand. They just don't understand. So Preborn is trying to stop that by just making the case with them, by showing the moms their baby in their womb. And it works. Most of them choose to keep their babies, or at least not to terminate their lives and maybe adopt them out when they see the graphic pictures of the babies moving, sucking their thumbs. It's an amazing thing. And so with that, you know that Preborn is a sponsor of this show, and I do everything I can to help them raise money to continue this great work. If you'd like to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy to make your most generous donation. And guess what? This is Sandy Rios, and you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. You can call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on social media platforms of every stripe. And you can listen to us on any podcast platform. AFR.net is home base. But you can listen on Spotify or Amazon or Apple, whatever your choice is. Sandy Rios 24/7 is there. And you can also go to sandyrios.com and listen to it very easily with a push of a button. Wow, what a day of rejoicing. It really is. A week, a month, maybe a year of rejoicing. I'm not sure I'll ever get over what President Trump just did when he signed those 200 executive orders and counting. I think there'll be more signed. But today we're going to concentrate on the thing I've been talking about for the last 4 years, and it's January the 6th. Thank God. Thank you, Lord, that the pardon came for them. And we're going to tell part of this story on a different broadcast, but today we're going to talk to John about the legal aspects of this and his own story of his involvement on that day on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
President Donald Trump kicked off his return to the White House with speeches, pageantry, and more than 200 executive actions. He signed several in front of supporters as they rallied in Capital One Arena yesterday, then several more in the Oval Office last night. ABC's Christiane Cordero is in Washington.
This morning, President Trump started his first full day in office following tradition, attending a prayer service at the National Cathedral. Behind the desk at the Oval Office yesterday, Trump pardoned approximately 1,500 January 6 defendants, nearly everyone convicted of their actions that day, including those who attacked law enforcement officers.
So this is January 6th. These are the hostages. Approximately 1,500 for a pardon.
Yes.
Full pardon.
Overnight, supporters of January 6th rioters celebrating at the D.C. jail. At least two released so far.
Thank you, President Trump. We're coming home.
Yeah! All right, Sandy Rios back with you, and we're back in studio after having been in Washington for much of those events. And we're going to talk about all of that. We have a special guest today, and I want to talk to him. But so much has happened, and as you know, I've talked about January 6th just about every day since it happened, and this is really a miracle. Well, I want to talk to one of the key players in all of this who has paid a price himself, I think a huge price, in a different way, and you've heard him on this show many times also. His name is John Eastman. John is a constitutional attorney, one of the premier constitutional experts in the country. He was the former dean of Chapman Law School. He was an executive with the Federalist Society. He still is with the Claremont Institute. He's had two of his law licenses suspended, one in Los Angeles and California and the other in D.C., which is his bread and butter. His family has been threatened. They had to sell their home and move to a different state. John has had to pay millions of dollars in his own defense. And what was his crime? His crime was suggesting, as a legal expert opinion, that the Constitution did not prevent in any way Vice President Pence from giving a little time to consider, as the states were requesting, some of the questions over the balloting for the election of 2020. And so for all that, he's paid quite a price. And I've asked him to join us this morning. So, John, first of all, good morning. And I just want to ask you, do you feel vindicated by the events of the last few days?
Yes, we do. Certainly. I'm looking forward to a future unburdened by what has been in the recent past. To quote the losing candidate from the last election. I think not only are the actions by President Trump with his executive orders aimed at getting our country back on track, but the overwhelming results of the election in his favor, I think, was a repudiation by the American people of the lawfare that he and I and so many others have been subjected to over the last 4 years.
How do you think, I know that you sort of answered that, but how do you hope this will change your life?
Well, certainly the federal actions go away, which is a very significant thing, given what I think the hyper-partisan nature of the District of Columbia, where those cases were going to be brought. But the criminal prosecutions in Arizona and Georgia, and for electors also in Michigan and Wisconsin, those cases remain very much alive. In fact, I think the prosecutors there are doubling down. I don't think they got the message from the election of what the American people said. We're done with this, folks. You can't target your political opponents anymore. And if you do, we're going to hold you accountable. So, but they're doubling down. They didn't get the memo, apparently.
Well, actually, that is something I absolutely want to talk to you about, because I'm getting a lot of information here about certainly the judges in D.C. I'll pick on the federal judges there first. And I'm sure you're very familiar with these judges, at least on some level. But just a couple of comments that they've made. Now, this is from, I think the most notorious to me is Judge Beryl Howell. She has overseen a huge amount of the J6 cases, and she's the one who's given the worst sentences, the full measure of retribution to these guys with no mercy. And this is what she said. This is the statement she made, John. She said, "No national injustice occurred here, just as no outcome determinative election fraud occurred in the 2020 presidential election." She said, "No process of national reconciliation can begin when poor losers whose preferred candidate loses an election are glorified for disrupting a constitutionally mandated proceeding in Congress and doing so with impunity. That's just a taste of it. But she's won justice. Yeah. What can you say about that, John? You probably know who she is, I bet.
Well, you know, there's a narrative out there. The government's put it out. It was the most secure election in our nation's history. There was no evidence of fraud at all. Those things are patently false. And any court that has actually looked at the merits has recognized the significant illegalities that occurred in the 2020 election. But none of that evidence was before Judge Barrell because she blocked any evidence of that, of the actual illegality in the election coming in. So this is an extemporaneous and false statement by a sitting federal judge pushing a partisan narrative. It's an outrage. What's even worse, though, is then she goes on to, in response based on that statement to say, I'm not going to grant the government, the executive branch's motion to dismiss with prejudice. I'm only going to dismiss these cases without prejudice. In other words, she's making a prosecutorial judgment on her own in violation of core principles of separation of powers. That's not her call. You know, the Department of Justice has said we're dismissing these with prejudice. That's the executive prosecutorial decision at work, and she has no business rejecting that claim, but other than furthering a partisan narrative. And this is the kind of thing that in normal times should lead to her removal from office and impeachment. But we know things have gotten so hyper-partisan in D.C. You might get an impeachment vote out of the House, but you would never get the supermajority conviction vote out of the Senate. So she's the one acting with impunity, as are several of her colleagues on that bench on the district court. And it demonstrates a serious problem with our system of justice.
So I understand this. Without prejudice means that they can be tried again for those same charges, right?
Yes, indeed. That's what it means. With prejudice means it's over permanently. Without prejudice means it can be brought back. This is the same thing that Jack Smith did with the indictment against President Trump. After President Trump got elected and he was going to have immunity from that suit, he moved to dismiss it, but without prejudice, so that they could bring it again. And even if the statute of limitations has run by the time he's out of office, we've witnessed up in New York that they go back and they change the statute of limitations after the fact to continue to go after people. So I mean, this really is a doubling down of the lawfare that we've witnessed over the last 4 years.
So just to drive this home, she's an Obama-appointed judge, and she's had, I'll just give a little bit more. She used to work for Patrick Leahy, who was one of the most wicked senators. I was in D.C. working at CWA when they were doing horrible things to judicial nominees, just horrible things to really fine people, and he was the leader of the pack. So she was a staffer for him. And she also worked for Loretta Lynch, the attorney general under Bill Clinton, and Andrew Weissman. So and she's done a lot of other things and said a lot of things that are really partisan, as you just suggested. Which reminds me, I'm going to take a detour here. I had a really good friend when I was young. Johnny was a fresh graduate from law school. We were living in Santa Monica, California when I met him. And he became the Chief Justice for the L.A. Superior Court, Paul Arthur Turner. Anyway, but I remember when Pat, that's what we called him, when Pat was elected, you know, he was such a character and always was a very active conservative Republican before I even knew anybody that was that, to be honest with you. And he was very outspoken, but as soon as he became a judge, you know, he explained to me, I can't say anything anymore. This is it. I have to be neutral. And he took that so seriously. And I think I wanted to tell that story because that's the way judges are supposed to be, right?
Well, it is. I mean, you go back to one of the key 2020 election cases that was argued up in the Michigan Supreme Court. And one of the justices of the Michigan Supreme Court from the bench during the oral argument said, I'm not going to pay any attention to anything you say because you just want to keep your king in power. It was stunning. And the reason we know of this is because one of the other judges had the courage to transcribe that part of the hearing in his dissenting opinion. I mean, this is conduct that no judge should engage in. I mean, we see the same thing in Arizona. The judge finally had to recuse himself down there because at the very time he's hearing my motion to dismiss on grounds that the Attorney General and her chief deputy had manifested such an intense anti-Trump bias by comparing him and his supporters to Nazis that it was an infringement on our First Amendment rights. The judge was circulating emails to all the other judges on the court using a Nazi analogy to describe Trump and his supporters. And when that came to light, he was forced to recuse himself. But these are things that judges ought not to be doing. I really think they're so caught up and blinded by their own Trump derangement syndrome that they can't see straight and perform the duties of that office. And I quite frankly, I think many of them need to be removed, but I just don't think there's the political will to do it.
I totally agree, John. I want to give two more egregious examples, and this is in the U.S. District. This is Judge Tanya Chutkan, also an Obama supporter. And she said, we cannot whitewash the blood, feces, and terror that mob left in its wake. Well, I've read a lot about January 6th, but I've never heard there were feces left behind, so that was news to me. And then she says, it cannot repair the jagged breach in America's sacred tradition of peacefully transitioning power. And then U.S. District Judge Colleen Collar, I'll just finish with this one. Dismissal of charges, pardons after convictions, and commutations of sentences will not change the truth of what happened on January the 6th. And then she talked about how we have thousands of videos, transcripts of trials, jury verdicts, and judicial opinions. Either they're doing this on purpose, they're part of the propaganda machine, or they truly are ignorant, John, of what actually happened on January the 6th.
The willful blindness is stunning. Without any acknowledgement that, in fact, all of the exculpatory evidence, much of it, was destroyed by the J6 committee, we now have an official report from an investigative committee of Congress that has referred members of that January 6th committee for criminal prosecution for the destruction of exculpatory evidence. President Biden issues pardons to those members of that committee precisely because he knew they engaged in criminal conduct in hiding the exculpatory evidence that these defendants could have used to say, wait a minute, this was a peaceful protest. This was exercising our right to petition the government for redress of grievances until the police fired on us and we reacted. So this was a peaceful protest with police officers opening the doors to let peaceful protesters in to the people's house so that their voices could patriotically and peacefully be heard until police started attacking them. This was a peaceful protest where instigators from Antifa and BLM and the FBI itself helped trigger people to respond and break windows. So all of that evidence that is now coming out will expose what the truth actually is, no matter how many times these Obama judges on the D.C. court try and pretend it is otherwise.
Well, that's why the declaration that the truth, it won't change the truth. That's good. That's because that's true. The truth will be revealed. And maybe because these guys are being pardoned, their stories will be told. And perhaps, you know, John, like on the Russia collusion garbage, it will get into the DNA of Americans because most of them haven't heard a word in defense of the J6ers or a word in defense of you. They don't know what the truth is. And so maybe these discussions will cause there to be, you know, more of this truth-based reporting on what happened to January 6th. I want to ask you about something
think it's important. Look, the marble above the Supreme Court says equal justice under law. And even if criminal trespass, even if some, confrontations with police occurred by some of the folks at the crowd there, you've got to compare it to what other kind of sentences are given out in similar or even much more egregious contexts. And you don't have to look far. You look 6 months earlier, the summer of terror in Portland and Kenosha, Wisconsin, and elsewhere in Seattle, by the BLM protesters. They were actually firebombing cars and taking over federal buildings and blocking off 10 square blocks of city and saying, you don't have any jurisdiction here. Now, that's actually an insurrection rather than the phony claim of insurrection here. And yet none of those people served any significant, if any, jail time. There wasn't this massive dragnet manhunt to try and locate everybody using the most advanced geofencing technology that they deployed against everybody in the J6. There weren't these general warrants issued for everybody's cell phone data and ping data to try and find out anybody that was even close to the Capitol on January 6th. None of that occurred with the summer actual riots and actual violence and actual attempt to take over government functions in significant parts of our cities. So if you compare these two things, President Trump in his pardon statement is absolutely right. This was a travesty of justice by those standards of equal justice under law. And these people have served more than enough for whatever minor offenses they committed. 4 years in a D.C. gulag is more than enough punishment, and we're done with it.
You know, as I was listening to him speak about that, because I had heard a rumor, John, before he did the executive orders and before the inauguration, that people around him were suggesting that he only pardoned some, and that some of the people that attacked the police or did violence according, you know, to the definition of the people that are interpreting it differently than maybe you and I might, would have to consider all of them. And when he said he was pardoning 1,500 and six or seven commutations, and they were going to, you know, look over more closely on those six or seven and decide what to do, they might get full pardons, but they might not. That was like the truth that he spoke in that moment about how they've been treated. I'm sure a lot of Americans watching that had no idea, John. I thought that was, he did a great service when he embellished. He didn't just sign it.
He did. And a lot of that work has been driven by the phenomenal investigative reporting that Julie Kelly has been doing, interviewing all these J6ers, hearing their stories, hearing that the deplorable conditions that they've been subjected to while they've been imprisoned, many of them before even going to trial, in pretrial detention, because, you know, they're a threat to our democracy. Holy crap, what a bunch of nonsense. And, you know, grandmothers. And, you know, even the folks that engaged in physical altercations with police, I think there's a story to tell there as well. Some of them, for a fact, and the video supports this, when police officers were beating with billy clubs Roseanne Boylan to death, and they intervened to try and stop the police from killing her, they're being charged with assaulting police. I mean, you know, that's why when President Trump says we're going to look into those further as well, it's those kind of, that kind of evidence that needs to come to light to get a full picture of what went on. Or the people that reacted when incendiary devices were sent into the crowd or were shot with rubber bullets or what have you, that had been peacefully protesting up until that moment. That's called provocation in the law. And police are not allowed to provoke you and then charge you for your reaction.
And shoot people in a peaceful crowd. You know, we've seen that. People don't know that either, John, but I do because I've followed this so closely. But one guy, you know, he was injured so badly, you could see his teeth. His cheek was just blown out. These are serious pellets, whatever you want to call them, firebombs. And they caught people's clothes on fire, and some were burned. I don't think people understand. And how frightened they all were when that happened. And so their natural reaction, of course, was to fight. And that's what some of them actually did. Many of them were former military policemen, and they knew how to fight. And it was confusing. One of them even can be seen on camera saying, "We're on your side. What are you doing? We're on your side," talking to the police. So it's really a tangled mess. It does remind me of a war zone where in battle, I don't think anybody actually knows everything that happened. You hear some stories and you try to piece them all together. But generally speaking, I think we know the truth now. And by the way, Jake Lane, go ahead, John, please.
Yeah, well, we're certainly, you know, and if anybody is still on the fence, if something untoward went on here by the government itself, they should ask this question. Why 4 years later do we still not have any evidence about who erected the gallows overnight before the January 6th meeting of Congress? In order to create the, you know, Pulitzer Prize-winning picture that would go along with the Hang Mike Pence chants. And we still don't know who led those chants either. But that would seem to be relatively straightforward. People show up, they're on camera, 5-6 in the morning, build a gallows, and then leave. And we've got geofencing data, as I understand it, that has them going to a coffee shop frequented by FBI officers. Now, why don't we know who those individuals were? when they've done a dragnet over everybody else all across the country to come up with these 1,500 people. That seems to be a relatively straightforward thing to have been able to accomplish in 4 years, and we don't know the answer to that, which makes me very suspicious.
You know, John, speaking of Mike Pence, you know, Mike sort of, I think, undermined you. I would say, we don't need to go into this. Let's just say that you advised him that he had the option. He claimed he didn't, and now he's trying to be quite self-righteous about the fact that he did not, that he felt like it was his constitutional duty to continue to receive those electoral votes, to acknowledge them, whatever the process is. And now this is something that just happened. I mean, I've been very disappointed in Mike. I used to know him very well. But I just read this morning that Mike's organization, which we're very familiar with, is now partnering with Leonard Leo to stop the nomination of RFK Jr. And they're claiming it's because of his stand on abortion. So let me just caveat that by saying I have reported to my audience that RFK has been making some stunning decisions on the issue of pro-life. He's hiring only pro-life staffers. That's what he's pledged to do. And he also said privately that to some that I reported here that he was beginning to have a change of heart and sort of a feeling of repentance for his view on that, his stand. Now, that's not an absolute declaration. I'm just telling you that's what I'm hearing on the inside. But Mike is claiming it's because of his pro-life stance. But now we know that they are getting, that we believe they're receiving all this money to stop RFK Jr. from the pharmaceutical industry. So that's how corrupt this has become. Two men, Leonard also, who has been highly respected. He was the one, as you know, really mostly responsible for handling President Trump lists of candidates for the Supreme Court. And they were accepted because everyone trusted Leonard. But this is a tangled mess. But I just think it's interesting to tell people that. I think that that also sort of indicates you, John, in a way. So, sadly.
I do. And look, you know, the power of the pharmaceutical industry here, the whole issue of vaccines, the creation of diseases that then they need vaccines for, all of these stories that have come out, you know, I don't follow it closely. I don't pay attention. But as far as I can tell, this is also what led to the head of Project Veritas being fired from the position of the organization that he created because he did an expose on what was going on in the pharmaceutical industry. So this is a very powerful industry, and we ought not to forget that. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is coming into office with a flashlight to shine a light a bit on what's been going on. So it doesn't surprise me that that industry is going all in to try and block him. I am disappointed in Leonard joining in that effort, if that is the case. And of course, I've lost all respect for Mike Pence. Not only that he disagreed with me about his constitutional authority. People can have disagreements about that. His own general counsel advised him on December 8, 2020, that this was a serious argument that he had this authority. But he has falsely claimed that he told us point blank in the Oval Office meeting on January 4th, that we were asking him to do something that he had no authority to do. That's just a lie. He did not ever say anything. His conversation in the Oval Office was always, well, that's an interesting point. I want to think about it more. He did not want to have that direct confrontation with President Trump in person. And so he's just been out lying about it. And, you know, I can respect somebody that has a different view of the constitutional, unsettled constitutional issue. But I really can't brook any effort for somebody that just blatantly lies about things.
That's very sad, but I think you're right, John. I know you're right. Very sad. All right, I want to ask you some other legal questions because it's confusing. Okay, we talked about the D.C. Circuit. We've named, what, three justices from their judges from that circuit, Chutkan, and we didn't mention Kohler Cotley, I don't think. Anyway, they're saying these things and are undermining, really, President Trump's executive orders releasing, pardoning these J6 prisoners. So my question is, who does anyone have authority over that circuit? I know that the president has the authority. He appoints the justices, and I know Obama padded that court with his appointees. But who could possibly, if they had the will, put this to an end?
Well, this is the trial court, the federal district court.
Not the D.C. Circuit.
To dismiss only without prejudice instead of with prejudice. could be appealed either by the defendant or the Department of Justice to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is also a bit stacked. But there are some very good judges up there, like Greg Katsas, for example. And then it could be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. I don't know whether they'll do that or not. The case is over for now, so they may just let it ride. But look, it's almost as if these judges are sore losers from the 2024 election. The very thing that they said that they exactly. were blaming Trump and his supporters for from 2020. The truth of that election is not even in contest, whereas 2020 remains hotly contested because of the immense amount of illegality that demonstrably occurred in that election.
Another question. President Biden's pardons before he left, those last-minute pardons, those preemptive, just in case, on the outside chance that any of these people have committed a crime, here's a pardon. Is that really constitutional? Can you preemptively pardon anyone in the universe just in case that, what if they murder someone in 30 days? You know, what does that mean exactly, and is it legal?
Well, you can't preemptively pardon somebody for things that have not yet occurred. So he couldn't issue a pardon to Hunter Biden for any future cocaine use, for example. But he can preemptively pardon him for past cocaine use, even if he hasn't been investigated, indicted, or convicted yet. And we've got several examples in our nation's history of that very thing occurring. Preemptive pardons of Civil War Confederate soldiers, for example. Both Gerald Ford's preemptive pardon of Richard Nixon. Gerald Ford and Jimmy
That's
Carter's
right.
preemptive pardon of Vietnam War draft dodgers. The use of that preemptive pardon is normally argued as a way to kind of just put a contentious issue behind us and move on. Biden's preemptive pardons seem to have a different character to them, an acknowledgement that there may well have been criminal conduct, for example, by the J6 committee members and its staff, and he wanting to prevent them from being criminally indicted. Or the pardons of Milley, who I think engaged in treason by telling our foreign adversary, China, that he would alert them if President Trump issued any order for an attack. That's a treasonous statement, and he was going to be investigated. Or Anthony Fauci for the blatantly false claims he made about COVID and the shutdowns, the vaccines that have caused wreaked havoc on our health system, on our children's education, and what have you, and preemptively pardoning him, not to settle matters and move on, but to protect them from criminal investigations for conduct that seems quite clear that they may have engaged in.
I guess that would include his authorization of cooperating and funding research on gain of function, which meant that they were trying to figure out a way to have these diseases leap into humans, to take their ground into humans from animals and other places. It's a horrible process. It's a horrible notion. And yet Fauci oversaw that and actually paid for that, the Wuhan lab. And that's
and then
right?
The American people that he didn't. And I don't recall whether those statements were made under oath in Congress or just out in the public, but either way, they were false statements. And if they were made to Congress, whether under oath or not, it violates Section 1001 of the Title 18 of the U.S. Code. So he was certainly susceptible to criminal investigation and, if determined to be warranted, criminal prosecution. And for conduct that was just egregious, as it appears to be, and he's now off the hook. Now, interestingly, the fact that he's off the hook or that Liz Cheney is off the hook means they also no longer have the ability to assert the Fifth Amendment privilege when subpoenaed to testify. And if they refuse to testify, despite that they can't waive a Fifth Amendment defense, they can be held in criminal contempt of Congress and prosecuted for that. Or if they testify falsely, they can be criminally prosecuted for perjury. So they're not out of the woods yet. And I think now with these pardons, we're going to have a much better opportunity to get the full story from people that have these pardons, because they are obligated to testify now.
Do you have a sense that the incoming crew in Justice and also the FBI will try to make that happen because it's the right thing? Do you think they're going to do that? Will they have the will?
I do think they're going to do that. Let's hope they have the will. I know Kash Patel is is somebody that's not going to has taken the bull by the horns. He's not going to let it go. And if the folks at Department of Justice tend to get a little weak on the will, I think Cash nipping at their heels will make sure they stay online. And I don't have any reason to suspect that they won't have the will to prosecute, to investigate these fully on their own. And if the evidence lead to it, bring criminal prosecutions where warranted. I think that's what the message was of picking people like Pam Bondi and Harmeet Dhillon. I mean, they know what's happened. They were heavily involved in what went on in 2020. And I think they have the tenacity to follow it through. You also see over in Congress the same thing. The House Administration Committee, subcommittee headed by Barry Loudermilk, producing these reports on the J6 committee. They've now created a special J6 assessment committee, essentially, to say we're going to get to the bottom of what really went on instead of this hyperpartisan farce that they called the J6 committee before. And that's now under Jim Jordan's Judiciary Committee. And I think that's a very good sign that they're not going to let this drop, that what occurred here, this example of lawfare, was egregious. The violations of the Fourth Amendment, the First Amendment, were egregious. The breach of attorney-client privilege and executive privilege was egregious, and I think they're going to get to the bottom of it. Even if some of the people involved can't be held accountable with their own criminal prosecutions, I think the American people need to know what went on.
Well, I think that justice, we're watching justice. I began to think in my lifetime I might not see it, but it's really happening, and I'm so grateful. Well, that's the end of my discussion with John, at least in part. Actually, we're going to talk to him in a future podcast about the birthright citizenship, because we don't want to hurry. And in a few minutes, Bruce is going to join me to just kind of make some comments about his observations about what's happening and the response of the judges in Washington, D.C., and we'll do that right after this. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
This is, of course, Sanctity of Life Month, and this is it's just so appropriate that he do this, that he pardon them. It's also very appropriate that we help to continue the work of Preborn, because even though President Trump is freeing the pro-lifers, and even though the March for Life is a glorious, wonderful occasion, we all know that the reality is that abortions have actually increased since Roe versus Wade. And so we have a lot of work to do, and I think Preborn is on the point of the spear on that. By providing ultrasounds for moms who, you know, are considering an abortion, it's just a miracle, another thing that's just so true and rich and powerful, and that's what they do, and that's what you help them do is provide them. It's $28 for one of them, and of course you can give any amount of money, be as generous as you can. And you can do that by going to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Yeah, that's a very good question. She is a highly partisan actor. She's an Obama judge. She used to work as a Democrat staffer on the Senate Judiciary Committee for the chairman, Patrick Leahy. She was a former federal prosecutor with Loretta Lynch and Andrew Weissman. She co-authored a legal paper with Andrew Weissman from the Mueller probe. She supervised the Mueller probe. She's been the harshest sentencer of January 6th defendants. She even pressured the DOJ to sentence them more harshly. She seized a congressman's phone, which was overturned by the D.C. Circuit. She made Trump's attorneys turn over attorney-client privilege records and didn't give them time to appeal before she made them turn them over. And now she's going after Twitter with an illegal warrant with Jack Smith to get all these records that the government is not entitled to have. She is a left-wing activist.
Well, that's Mike Davis, our friend Mike Davis, talking about U.S. District Judge Beryl Howell. She's an Obama appointee. We talked about her a little bit with John in our conversation. And Bruce, I know you've been listening, and I you were there. Have you in your lifetime as a prosecutor in Cook County and dealing with judges as an FBI agent, have you ever seen a judge with this much prejudice, at least expressed? You knew they had it, but...
Yes, they all have it, because unfortunately under our system, you're appointed by a political party. Usually you're nominated by a political party and then confirmed, but not to this degree. This is a very disturbing trend to me. Judges commenting on cases that are actively before them. You know, judges have always gone out on the lecture circuit and, you know, spoken about cases that they've litigated. But when you have a case before you, that is an unfair advantage. First off, you've obviously probably already made up your mind on how you're going to rule before you even hear the evidence, if you're out there making statements like Ms. Howell is. It also, as an attorney representing a side, it gives you an advantage if you know what she's looking for in order to justify her ruling. I mean, this just really, you know, there's a reason that the statue of justice wears a blindfold, and that is the judge is supposed to sit there and listen to the evidence and only the evidence that's put into the trial record. They are not to bring their look. We're all human. We bring some prejudices into whatever we do. However, if you're going to sit there, especially as a federal judge, and let your preconceived notions or prejudices dictate the way you're going to rule on a case, you are not fit for the bench.
It's like because I don't like you or what you've, you know, your business or your family, no matter what the charges against you might be on, I don't know what it might be, tax evasion or something, I'm going to rule against you even if you're not guilty because I don't like you. So that's what the founding fathers didn't want. That's why they really instituted this system of the blind lady justice. The scales of justice being even. And look, it's always been an imperfect system, but I've never seen it in my lifetime. I've never seen it this bad. And then of course, so they're continuing to try to undermine him and try to go after the J6ers. Bruce, those state charges, if they go after them on state charges, President Trump can't touch that, can he?
It's a very difficult process. There is a way. I'm not actually completely familiar with it, but there is a way, but it's very difficult. And look, this prosecutor Krasner in Philadelphia, he knows that all he's doing is harassing people. This is not going to succeed, this double jeopardy type prosecution. But again, these guys could get locked up, held without bond or inability to make bond, cases stretched out over time. And to get down the road a year or two from now and then have an appellate judge say, you know what, that statute is unconstitutional and therefore they should have never prosecuted you. Meanwhile, you've spent a fortune on attorney's fees. You maybe spent additional time in detention. And, I mean, this should be stopped immediately.
Regular people can't withstand that. They've lost... These guys, these J6ers, have lost, many of them, have lost their wives and their families. People haven't stood by them. They've been rejected in their hometowns, their areas, because they've been listening to the lovely news that's been lying about what actually happened, labeled, disgraced. And these are men who owned businesses. These are men who were policemen, who were military men. So many went there to protect the crowd from Antifa and Black Lives Matter activists who had before at Trump rallies in D.C. We know this personally. Come after the crowds and, you know, had those riots right in front of the White House. Even the president was in danger because of their behavior. And so they were there to try to help protect. And men, that's what they tried to do. And that's what they've now look, I'm not saying every person in that crowd. I think that would be really unfair. And that would be not being Lady Justice for me to say every single person didn't do anything wrong. But I would say that because of their mistreatment, wouldn't you say, Bruce, and the fruit of the poison tree theory, that they've been charged with bogus claims, that they should get consideration for that?
Absolutely. And something we've talked about before is when you use the term exculpatory evidence, that means evidence that's in possession of the government that may show that a person who's been charged with a crime may not be guilty of that crime. And when I was both a prosecutor and a law enforcement officer, I'll tell you what, if you want to get in trouble, if you want to get your law license taken away or be fired as an agent, hold back, withhold exculpatory evidence or the existence of it. And I'll tell you, that was the quickest way to get in trouble. And this seems to have been, you know, standard operating procedure for the January 6th people. We knew from the first day of, after January 6th that there were thousands and thousands of hours of video available to either prove or disprove, in many cases, someone's conduct that was there on January 6th. And if you remember, that I don't to this day know that it has all been released. And even when it was released as one big batch very long after the fact. And for someone to go through all that tape in the limited amount of time that they had is just impossible.
I want to remind people that the people that held that up, that was Kevin McCarthy in the House. That was he was over, it was the committee in the House that would not release it, and it was Johnson who finally released it, and he hasn't been in that long. So these people, in their own defense, have not been able to have access to the videos. It's horrific what's happened, and I blame Republicans, too, for not stepping up. A few people, a handful of people whose names I could name, have tried to help, and that's it. Now they're joining the bandwagon, yeah. Well, and I'm glad, but...
Well, that circumstance in and of itself, in my mind, is enough to give someone a pardon, because we cannot have a system of justice if the prosecutors are going to pick and choose with what they're going to release to people. Look, it's got to be a level playing field. This is what we have, whether it cuts towards us or cuts against us. This is everything we have. You're welcome to look at it, and that's how you have a fair trial.
Bruce, let's end today with some good news, because there is some good news.
That would be nice.
I can't get to all the orders. I just want to mention, let me mention something. Let me remind you guys of something. Does anybody remember the gay pride flag, you know, being flown on the White House every June for the last many years? I think since Obama has been in, Obama's administration and then the Biden administration. Also, they raised the Black Lives Matter flag at the U.S. Embassy and consulates in Brazil to celebrate Black History Month. They also flew the LGBTQ+1+ flag in all kinds of embassies across the world. And I have to tell you, I that enraged me. And so guess what President Trump did? He issued an executive order, the one flag policy. And this is what it says. Starting immediately, only the United States of America flag is authorized to be flown or displayed at U.S. facilities, both domestic and abroad, and featured in U.S. government content. The flag of the United States of America united all Americans under the universal principles of justice, liberty, and democracy. These values, which are a bedrock of our great country, are shared by all American citizens, past and present. And one more statement, the U.S. flag is a powerful symbol of pride, and it is fitting and respectful that only the U.S. flag be flown or displayed at U.S. facilities, both domestically and abroad. And by the way, that's a policy memorandum, not an executive order, but yay, I'm so happy about that. I'm so happy about that. Drove me crazy. And there's some more good news, right?
There is, and we can speak to this story personally, because back in 2017, we were at President Trump's initial inauguration. And, of course, the day after the inauguration was the Women's March, 500,000 strong. And, I mean, they were vile. They're, you know, remember they were wearing the pink hats and what that symbolized. And we saw all kinds of language on signs held up that would make a sailor blush.
Yeah, let me interject, because this is before any of us knew what was happening. We're just on the elevator. We're in the hotel, and suddenly we're getting ready to leave D.C., and we're seeing this.
And we're seeing these people in the hotel up close and personal. I rode on the elevator with some of them, and they had young children with them, and they had signs with the F word all over it. And I said to them, I hope you're happy. I hope you think you're setting a great example for these children. I think it's outrageous. And they just stood there mum and looked ahead. It was sickening. Well, anyway, guess who showed up right before Trump's second inauguration this week? Was a group of mainly women protesting.
With their hats.
Yeah, with their hats.
And their abortion
signs.
Screaming.
And, of course, the media, we didn't actually see the live crowd. We were watching it on television, and it looked massive. Well, guess what? Those visions were misleading, because there were only 50,000 people estimated to be at this instead of 500,000. Now, that's still a lot, but I have to believe that that was a disappointment to the organizers, that they were only able to turn out one-tenth of the people they were the last time.
I think I read in there that they actually admitted to, you know, a burnout on the part of their...
Yeah.
Well, it'd be hard to burn out in D.C. right now. Probably the cold weather, too, but whatever it was wonderful.
Well, all I can tell you is the Trump supporters turned out. They were everywhere this weekend. You can talk about cold weather being a reason. You can talk about whatever you think. But I can tell you the Trump people were out in mass.
It was really fun, wasn't it, honey?
It was
they
wonderful.
They were so excited, and we were, too. We were all bundled up, too. But because it was so cold, just a few logistics, we could not get around. They had a, what do you call that when you block off areas where you can't enter with those fences?
Well, they had several of the streets were blocked off with the high metal fences that have been standard operating procedure now by the D.C. people that put them around the Capitol. Basically trying to hold back the crowd so that they have a safe zone where the president might be. And anyone that is going to be admitted to the safe zone has to go through security. So the way they enforce this is that the Secret Service and Homeland Security erect these fences, whether it be along Pennsylvania Avenue or around the Capitol. They're probably 8 feet high. They're metal, mesh, and they are very effective. And what they do is they funnel you into various points where you go through the magnetometers, the metal detectors, and are searched to make sure you have no weapons on you before you're admitted into what they call the safe zone. And the safe zone would be like Pennsylvania Avenue, where on a normal inauguration, the president's entourage would come through there in automobiles, and there'd be marching bands and things of that nature. But because of the cold, that was called off, and it was held in the Capital One Arena.
Yeah, so we were expecting to, we had tickets to go to the inauguration. And we were going, we were all bundled up, we were ready, but then it was taken inside, as you all know, and so we couldn't go. And then the parade was canceled. So many of you saw as much as we saw. We got to go to an inaugural ball, which was lovely. But there are several inaugural balls, by the way, and we didn't go to the big hitters ones, the ones that you see on television. We weren't there with Melania. I wish we had been. But it was a wonderful trip, but I just wanted to describe it. And as we were trying to get around, we couldn't get out of that zone. So it was hard to move around. But you know what? I didn't hear anyone complain. Did you, Bruce?
No, people were loving it. Even when President Trump didn't come by in the parade, people stood there. We did, just on the off
just
chance
waiting.
That as he left the Capital One Center to go to the White House for the first time in his new administration, that he might drive past us. And somebody was watching live the president's movements, and we all stood there anticipating and finally said, "Up, he turned down the other street. He is not coming by us." But you know what? No one complained.
No.
Everyone was just happy. Then we walked to the train and we went home.
Yeah. So that was our adventure. But it was wonderful to be there in that atmosphere. We'll never regret that, and we'll never forget that as long as we live. So these are great days for the country, and I want to thank you. I want to thank Timothy Plant for making it possible for us to tell you these stories. And they help you, of course, put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Well, thank you for joining in with us in celebration on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.